All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I'm Jim McPhee, and right there is Mr. Joe DeCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? You know what time it is. Time to talk some football. We're proud and happy to be part of Grumblings Media, and we want you guys to be part of it, too. Head over to Grumblings Media on YouTube. Make sure you guys hit that subscribe button for us. Also, while you're there, hey, it doesn't hurt, hit the thumbs up as well. Let YouTube know that you want our voices to be heard. And everybody else that is the family of Grumblings Media. And don't forget to share. That's right. Share it. Sharing is caring. And tell a friend to tell a friend. That's what it's all about. Jim, I'm excited about this week because guess what? No shortage of mistakes were made this week in week three.
Referees
were bad.
Oh, my goodness.
The teams were bad. So, like, we are by far, we're not even close to mid-season form.
Yep. We got to see the digital chip change the ball position, too, where the ball was spotted, too. Mm-hmm. So we got to see that in action. So we saw a little bit of everything. We saw some block kicks, too, some block punts. A lot of craziness, exciting, a lot of big plays, some close games, but then some major blowouts, too, right? And we'll get into that in just a little bit. The news that dropped today, though, and what everybody's talking about, especially up here, we're in upstate New York right now, Jackson Dart will start after so much media going crazy, drilling Brian Daboll, him trying to dodge the situation, dodge the question. he just pulled it out by not saying anything. He was just like, we're going to look at it all the tape. And they're like, yeah, but last week you were totally like, yeah, we're starting Russ. This week you're just like, we're watching the tape. That's something different. So what are you saying that you're not saying? And he goes, we're going to watch the tape. We're going to evaluate. Okay. And then lo and behold, after all that, he probably went into management or Joe Shane or ownership after he's like, come on, guys. You're leaving me out there. I can't keep doing this out there. We're going to put this guy in or not, man. I can't be going out there and walking out there and just taking shots like this. Let's get it done. So Jackson Dart will get the start now in week four after we've seen enough of Russell Wilson and his poor play. 2 weeks out of three, not looking so good. The one outlier is the Dallas Cowboy game where he was going toe-to-toe with a poor defense of the Dallas Cowboys. But it was more relevant this week, again, when he is getting pressured and it's time to win the game, and he's throwing the ball away. I don't know anybody that when the chips are down and it's time to go out and win a game, you're just giving up downs and throwing the ball away. On fourth down, you're pressured and you throw the ball into the stands or away. That makes no sense whatsoever at all. For a veteran to do that, it is mind-blowing. And that was one of the telltale signs. And there's many more within that game that we saw and within the past play the last couple weeks, Joe.
So, here's the thing for me is we've seen Russell Wilson be the Russell Wilson of old back in Seattle when he was playing against the Cowboys. And to our surprise, the Giants were in that game the whole way through and almost pulled it off. And then we've seen Russell Wilson kind of regress immensely in last week where – what are we watching? Like, is it the Giants play calling? Is it the fact that he's just making poor decisions? Like, and then the other part of it too is, I'm not so sure. Like, Russell Wilson doesn't have that. It's almost like he doesn't have that fire anymore. It's almost like he's out there playing quarterback because he still wants to start. He still wants to be the guy, but I just don't see the fire anymore. I don't see. It looks like he's kind of just walking through the game, and I don't see any of that passion that we once saw before. And if that's the case, this is the right decision. Make the change now. Get Jackson Dart experience. Let's see what the kid can do. Is he going to be flawless? Hell no. No rookie comes in, and it's a rarity if that ever happens, right? Like, we've seen C.J. Stroud in his rookie year, where he just blew the doors off the league, but it's a rarity. So Jackson Dart, it's to be expected he's going to make some mistakes, but in the end, I think this is the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And another point that I got to make when you look at this and you look at the team, and one major thing that jumped out to me was when Jackson Dart is in, they're doing RPOs, run options. And I get that even one, they're trying to keep it safe. Like, oh, let's see if he does what he runs. But two, other than those moments, they don't run RPOs at all in this offense at all. None, yeah. Like zero. So if you're holding your whole playbook at bay because you have Russell Wilson in and you're only using half the book, we'll say, then it's obvious. It's ridiculous that you're holding the whole offense back. You're holding everybody back from being able to do plays like that, be able to run different options. You know what I'm saying? If that is what's there, you know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's not to that degree, not half the playbook or anything, but it's a small margin in the playbook where you have RPOs and everything. But here's that you hit the nail on the head when you said, how come they're not doing it when Russell Wilson's in there? Well, there's a reason for it. It's because they're worried about Russell Wilson getting hurt. And we know that he's not the fastest guy. He's got some speed for his age and for his position, but he's not Jackson Dart either. Like, Jackson Dart is not only younger, but he's also more intense. He's passionate about football. He can't wait to get on the football field and show what he can do. And he has more, you know, he's faster than he looked, you know, than he was anticipated coming out of college. The kid can move, bottom line. Mm-hmm. And now that they're making this decision to make the change, I think this is going to help the Giants offense immensely. You're going to have a young kid ready to go. He can run if he has to. And he has a cannon for an arm. He's got a stronger arm than Russell Wilson. So he's not going to struggle with getting the ball to certain spots. So I love this decision.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, when you look at this in the way the team is right now, they're already at an 0-3 start. You got nothing to lose. Might as well put him in. He's going to have his ups and downs, but at least, again, it's a different thing that defenses have to look at, something that could pose a threat to where Russell Wilson doesn't pose a threat at all. And it was nothing more telling than when they went even into the red zone to where they're dead last, well, 31st in the league in the red zone, you know, only 20% when they get down there. And that, which was kind of mind-boggling to me, is why not do Jackson Dart there to where you're threatening to score if they have to look to see if Dart's going to take off running and possibly or hand it off to Scadaboo or Tracy for that matter or Singletary or whatever. You had different options to where defenses had to look for all that plus a throw. That made more sense to kind of run those types of options towards the red zone, and they just flat out didn't. And so now where he is the starter, hopefully that means that when they do get down there, I mean, they haven't had a problem getting down there and marching down. It's just the turnovers or the turnover on downs or getting down in the red zone and coming up with nothing, either by going for it or now even with Graham Gano being injured, not kicking the field goal. So, and in turn, that also makes their defense poor. They've been getting more pass pressure every single week, but not really being able to get in there as much as you would like.
They're on the field too much.
With being on the field too much and what this offense is dragging, it hasn't really helped at all.
No.
And so that's one thing I think to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. And I'm not expecting them to win and whatever, especially against the Chargers. I think they put up a better fight, though, and a better chance to win with the options that they have now.
Yeah, and we talk about options. Well, guess what, Jim? Two of my favorite draft picks, that Cam Scadaboo and Jackson Dart, are now going to be starters together on the football field together. It's going to be something to watch for sure, because we saw a glimpse, a very small glimpse. Unfortunately, it comes to, Tyrone Tracy going down with an injury. He's going to be out for the next 4 weeks. He's going on short-term IR. We'll get all that. But Cam Scadaboo showed up and showed out, even in a game that was out of reach.
Yep.
The kid can play. Let him cook, as the young kids say, right? So I love it. And Jackson Dart, too. This is going to be an exciting time. Yes, we're not saying that Jackson Dart's going to come in here and all of a sudden the Giants go from 0-3 to playoff bound. We're saying that they're going to definitely be more competitive, and they are going to win some games that otherwise you probably wouldn't have with Russell Wilson at the helm. So I like this direction. You got to get the kid experience anyway. Why are we waiting when we're when the Giants are 0-3 right now? What's the sense of waiting till we're 0-8? What's the sense in waiting till it's three quarters of the way through the season and saying, okay, yeah, we're going to be picking in the top 10 again, so we might as well throw the kid in. No, let's see what we have now. Get him experience, and let's see just what we can do now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, when the chips are down, you need to go out and win the game. Jackson Dart isn't going to throw it into the stands in a way. You know, he's going to go out and try to win the game.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
That's not the only veteran quarterback I've seen do this.
I know. I get that.
Here's my thing.
It's like they got something in their mindset. They're like, I have to play it safe. I have to play it safe. Like, that's way too safe. You got to win the game.
I don't want another interception stat, so I'm going to throw it away and end the game. No, like, I've seen this happen before where veterans, for some reason, like, even when they get flushed out of the pocket, it's like, it's the last play. It's fourth down. It's you got to give it. You got to give someone a chance to catch it, and instead they just kind of throw it through the back of the end zone. Yep. It's like, why?
Yeah, and the intentional grounding thing too is ridiculous. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? But but we got
that's referees for you.
Yeah, but we got our first comment in the house. It's Mike Tackett, our man.
What's going on, Mike?
Yeah, that's right. One of our Blitz boys out there. He's got a question because we did see some stuff about the CFL, you know, going all these changes into their rules. He said, did you guys see the CFL is changing their rules to be more like American football? 100-yard field goal post at the back of the end zones. Mm-hmm. Play clock will be 35 seconds. I feel like Canada is trying to embrace the American game more in hopes of potentially landing franchises in Toronto or Montreal.
Here's my thing. And I understand what he's saying, but I don't see it happening going to Canada. Because there's that Canadian market is up there. I'm not sure if the Canadians are going to be as welcoming as maybe the Americans would be willing to do it. Because of actually, obviously there's political reasons too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Canada isn't in such.
What do you mean? The NFL doesn't get political, Joe.
So, you know what I'm saying? So like, My thing with this is, yes, I think they're changing the rules for a different reason. I think they're changing the rules to hopefully give more or better opportunity for the current Canadian football players to maybe acclimate and be able to shift over to American football if they get an opportunity. Because even though they still kind of get opportunity here and there, you don't hear it as much, but in the end, maybe this kind of opens the door a little bit more to where, like, oh, we got the same rules, so there's really not that much of a difference, and, you know, let's give them more opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's to open more eyes to Canadian football, I think, too. You know, let's focus more on that. You know, like, hey, look at us. We're pretty much like you guys now. You know, we're up here. Check it out. You know, because there are some diehards that really follow the CFL, like John Turner and Mike Tackett, too. You know, some others, again, you know, don't have the time or whatever. They're just like, it's Canadian football, whatever. If the NFL were interested in grabbing Canadian teams, don't you think they would have had even a couple games up there? They don't even have games in Toronto. Like, Canadian, they're going international all over to trying to spread.
Yeah, they're not going Canada.
They're not even playing.
They're going to Mexico.
Over out there, you know. And they've you know, teased the thought of, you know, the Buffalo Bills being sold to, you know, an owner that was going
like
be Toronto. you know go to Toronto and stuff like that, but it's never really happened. And I don't know, like you said, even if Canada and Toronto, you know, they want to kind of do that sort of thing, I think they want to try and just make their product more enticing to other people as well. And like you said, you know, acclimating other players, you know, that know the, you know, the way American football is played too, that just makes it you know, more enticing to go there too. Absolutely. It would be interesting though, but you know, I don't know. I don't know about the NFL being willing to expand to that extent. I really don't want them to expand any more. You know what I mean? Because 32 teams, I think, is kind of like that right number. If you start getting more, and then, like you've talked about a bunch, I've said it, these international games are crazy, and I get they're trying to promote and get it worldwide and stuff, but it's taxing on the players. How would you bring it into a season if you did get teams in these other overseas markets? It's just – nuts. You know, I don't see that. You know, if start another league if you're going to do that, you know, and still have it licensed by the NFL or something.
Well, they used to have an NFL Euro League.
Yep.
You know, they had an NFL Euro League, and they had teams over in Europe and in that region, and it was successful for a few years. Mm-hmm. And there was players that would get picked from that area and brought over to America, and they'd get an opportunity, but it went away. It died off. And I feel like the NFL is still grasping for that reach again, but they're doing it in the wrong way because they're utilizing their own league to do it just to play games. Now, there's, like you mentioned, Jim, like there's definitely like whispers in league circles where they want a franchise in the UK. And how are you going to make that work between all other 32 teams? If that was to happen, it's like, dude, the travel would be insane. Like, jet lag galore. I mean, you can't have a West Coast team drive or, you know, fly all the way over to the UK to have a game. It's like, it'd be insane. Scheduling conflicts. I mean, there'd be, I think it would be chaos, honestly. And, I just think that's the wrong decision. And that's my own opinion about it. But maybe the NFL is hopefully not going to go that direction. I know there's talk about it, but hopefully they're going to kind of just keep it in the States. And I get, you know, playing games, you know, overseas and stuff just to kind of like, cause there's fans all over the world, but don't go overboard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we'll get to see what that kind of looks like too when, later on, in the season, Minnesota does like back to back games, one in Ireland and then I think in England. So they're staying out there, but then even being that gone away from in the U.S. for a bit and then finally coming back, see if that ends up taking its toll too as well. So this past weekend, Joe, there was a lot of craziness going on, blocked field goals, like I said, punts. But I think nothing more telling than some of the games here with turnovers. So I decided to create this segment for tonight and call it Turnover Tuesday. Look at that. There's Joe with the turnovers. Look at that. He's loving it. We got
I make all kinds.
He does. Joe, yeah, he loves it. He's in the bakery. There he is. He's got some beautiful turnovers there. And we're talking about the Patriots, the Bengals, the Texans, and the Falcons games. Joe, let's get right into it with the Patriots. The Patriots, the thing about this team is, you know, we both expected like our turnaround a little bit here and get better. But for a Mike Vrabel team, they seem kind of undisciplined here or just – I don't know, lack thereof of protecting the football because they drive to the red zone, but then they turn it the ball over more than anybody, I feel like, in the red zone.
Well, here's the, and it comes down to personnel, really. We saw Gibson, you know, fumble the ball once. We saw Ramondre Stevenson fumble multiple times, you know, and it's like now it's almost to where they're at a point where, like, they can't trust those running backs anymore. They have to go to the rookie. You know, they got to go to Devery Henderson. They got to let him tote the rock, whether it be running the ball or throwing it to him, you know, in a pass play. So let's take a look. Like, what they ended up doing is they turned the ball over. Yes, you're right, five total times.
Mm-hmm.
One was an interception. The other four were fumbles lost.
Right.
Fumbles.
Yep.
These guys are professional athletes, and I understand it does happen in the game. I get all that, but multiple times it can't happen. There's got to be something that they're doing wrong, whether it be the way they hold on to the ball or they just don't care when they get into a crowd or a scrum and they just kind of hold the ball loosely and it just gets, you know, punched out. Like, these type of things are critical for any given team. These are more than likely the reasons why you lose games is turnovers. It's all the time. We see it every single week. Turnover, turnover, turnover turns into points for the opposing team, and then it's over. So it's got to change. Patriots got to start kind of focusing this week on preventing those fumbles at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about it. Turnovers. Two inside the Steelers 5 yard line. Like I said, right in the red zone, Ramondre Stevenson had two of them of his own. Antonio Gibson and then Drake May even did, you know, then he's got the interception is in the end zone. So this is what I'm talking about going to the red zone, getting down there, not only not coming away with points, but again, you get the ball right back over to the Steelers to where this was still a tight game, and still they had an opportunity to win, and they blow it again in the end, can't get it done to where Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers were able to walk out of there with a win somehow, but they did not play very well. They still look like a team that's very old and not doing well. Yes, I get the defense is credited to some of those turnovers with the punch outs and things like that, but the Patriots kind of gave it to them, I feel like, too, because they had tons of momentum, had every opportunity to win, and they kind of just blew this one.
Yep.
So, and it seemed to where they could have just put them right down, you know, to get back into a division to where, yes, the Bills are the cream of the crop of that division, and nobody's touched them, but with the Dolphins and how they're, you know, have a slow start, they're looking, you know, rough. The Jets not so good either. They had an opportunity to kind of get into this game and kind of set the stage to make a, you know, a positioning into this division at least. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to the Bengals now. The Bengals, this one, I used to be a Jake Browning fan, and I think he did all right even as a backup, you know, for the most part when he had to for Joe Burrow in the past. But it seems like this year, again, just wicked turnover prone. But then, man, I thought they would play a little better. You know what I mean? I understand that, you know, you're a backup getting in to try and to, you know, fill in a void that was, you know, Joe Burrow, and you're not going to be able to do that. But you had Minnesota on the other side with Carson Wentz. I still felt like the Minnesota Vikings were going to win with Carson Wentz just because he has more experience. They have really good weapons too. But it wasn't even Jake Browning's fault last week, right? The Bengals, they had 5 turnovers of their own too. And Jake Browning had 3 fumbles of his own, but Ja'Marr Chase fumbled. I mean, just they were just significant contributions to them losing this game and getting blown the hell out. Like the defense of Rodgers on defense. Oh, my God, looked like just an all-star, you know, on defense here. And what they were doing, just the turnovers, nonstop scoring, and just pummeled the daylights out of this Cincinnati Bengals team. And look what they are without Joe Burrow, I guess, huh?
I mean, it's definitely the biggest part of it is the quarterback. But on the other hand, like, as a football team, you can't – they tied for first in week 3 for the most turnovers with 5 total. Like, you know, 3 fumbles lost, 2 interceptions thrown. You're not going to win games like that. It's just too big of a hurdle to overcome. And the Vikings, they were coming in, like we mentioned before, Carson Wentz, you know, solid quarterback, veteran quarterback. Yeah, he's not going to do anything crazy, but he's going to, for the most part, all he had to do was not lose the game for you. And he did that, you know. So this team was already kind of, you know, missing their starting quarterback, and that's a big a huge loss, really, with Joe Burrow going down. That we didn't expect them to win this game, but at the same time, even with Joe Burrow there, yeah, they would have limited turnovers, but I still think this game would have been out of reach anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was tough, and like you said, even not only Minnesota, just defensively on offense, just handed to Jordan Mason, right? He was just getting done, the ground and pound.
Yeah.
100%. It was just crazy. So that kind of blew my mind. That was such a big blowout, you know. But yeah, I mean, turnovers, and they're crucial. And that's what I mean. When even, like I said, even Ja'Marr Chase and other guys, you're like kind of like, wow, man, really? I understand the quarterback situation,
right?
But now you got to kind of like, how many times is Zach Taylor gonna be saved by? Well, you didn't have Joe Burrow. He's injured for the season. Oh, you didn't have this because of injuries. Oh, what are you going to do? Time after time, this team keeps playing underwhelmingly. You know what I mean? It's one thing that like you don't have your star quarterback. I get that. But you have tons of weapons around you. No, you don't have a great defense. I get that. But they had, you know, enough to try and keep you close in this one, at least to an extent. It comes down to coaching then. When you don't have – you know, your star in there, you got to rally the troops together and say, everybody, you know, come on, next man up mentality, let's get this going. And you didn't see any of that at the sideline at all. And he was just kind of like, bro, you know, we got to do this. And it didn't seem like anybody responded at all. They were just couldn't wait to get the hell out of there.
Well, I couldn't wait to get out of there and stop watching the damn game because I don't even think it was coaching. I think, dude, when you lose your key starter at quarterback, like no matter who it is, no matter what team, what degree quarterback it is, you lose your starter, you're dead in the water. That's what kind of helps that's the backbone of your offense. That's the guy that kind of makes it go. And, mm-hmm. I think that guys were already down morally because that they had Jake Browning as their starting quarterback. Like, mm-hmm. I understand they were going to play as well as they possibly could for Jake. It's not like they were going to just say, oh, well, screw this guy. But it is what it is. Like, this is a mm-hmm. terrible situation. And the only way the Bengals can turn this thing around is if they trade for a quarterback.
Right,
Mike Tackett in the comment section said, "Could you imagine Jameis Winston in Cincinnati? 3,000 yards, 35 TDs, and 35 interceptions. It'd be hilarious." But I don't know if the Giants even want to let him go because of their current quarterback situation. Like Jackson Dart. Let's just say if he falters or if he gets injured, even worse. What are you going to go back to Russell Wilson? I think you might go to Jameis instead. And then for mm-hmm. Cincinnati, you can't sit on your hands, guys. Your season is toast if you don't make a move. Mm-hmm. You got to at least try. So why aren't you calling Atlanta right now with Kirk Cousins? Why aren't you seeing this, see if you can kind of somewhat save the season in a sense? At least try to save the season.
Yeah, at least make the phone calls. And I know Mike Tackett, he also says here, Cincinnati's giving Joe Burrow the Carson Palmer treatment. He needs more than two highly paid wide receivers to be successful. They need linemen who can actually protect him. They've tried to
fix that
line, but they just, absolutely.
They just need linemen. They neglected that. And now we're at where we're at. So without the offensive line being completely secured up front, it doesn't matter if it's Joe Burrow or someone else like Jake Browning, like you're going to more times than not, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as looking for another trade, why not at this point? Because you could be in worse positions, right? They've luckily again got out of the first 2 weeks with two wins. So they're leading the division right now at 2-1.
Right.
Baltimore now is 1-2. They play the Chiefs, who is also 1-2. So mm-hmm. potentially Baltimore could lose to the Chiefs. I don't see it happening, but imagine Baltimore goes 1-3. Ooh. You're poised still at the top here, so why not make a move? This is where you want to be. When was the last time that the Bengals were able to be in this moment, be in the top of the division, say, okay, now we're Baltimore is vulnerable right now.
We're in the driver's seat.
Let's move. Let's go. They're always playing from behind, So why not? See what it is. How many times you got to cash? We've seen teams cash in for the chip. This team has the potential with the weapons that they have around them. They just need to get there. So Kirk Cousins, I think that's a good option. But what's it going to cost you? I know Atlanta, is looking for a lot, but
it's not going to cost you a lot.
What's going to be?
You're going to have to take on that contract, and if that's the case, then Atlanta cannot expect high-end compensation. This isn't like they're going to take on half the contract or half the guarantees, mm-hmm. and then they're like, okay, yeah, but that means you've got to give us a third-round pick. Like, no. Like, if you want us to take the contract, okay, fine. We'll have to figure something else out because that's the other big hurdle for Cincinnati is we know that they're kind of against the wall in terms of financials, that they're going to have to figure something out in order to make it work, or maybe working with Atlanta and try to say, hey, can you guys hold on to half of the guarantees? We'll give you a higher pick. We'll try to make this thing work, and it'll help us financially. Like, if they can come to terms, pull the trigger, because we're only going into week 4. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you mentioned, Jim, that they are on top of the division, this doesn't happen for Cincinnati.
Right.
They usually don't have a hot start and are sitting on top. So, now, with that being said, and Joe Burrow most likely is going to be out the whole season, and let's just say if they happen to get this deal done, and Kirk Cousins, after learning the playbook, gets more familiar with the weapons around him, helps carry the team just enough to maybe even get a wild card berth, and Joe Burrow happens to be healthy at that time, Because there's a possibility that if they make the playoffs that he could possibly come back if everything goes well, right, health-wise. And then he comes back. Like, so, but don't give up now. Like, it's week four. You're going into week four. Make something happen. Now, if you can't get it done, then it is what it is, and you're just going to have to ride the rest of the season out. But, or maybe pull off another trade. Maybe it's not Kirk. Maybe it's someone else that's a backup that isn't stellar, but you just need them to manage the game that they have experience.
Yeah.
Marcus Mariota in Washington just had a fairly decent game in Washington. And who knows? Maybe you call Washington right now and be like, hey, we saw Mariota play. We think he could work okay with our Cincinnati offense. Like, let's make a deal. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
the box here.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, it's going to get rough here, and they can easily be on the back end of this because they have a tough opponent in the Denver Broncos coming up this next week, too. So that tough defense, I know they're going to be salivating over Jake Browning here. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, okay, the turnover machine, let's get this, you know. And they need to bounce back, too. So they're going to be hungry. So they're going to be wanting to win here.
Every team's hungry every Sunday.
No, I get that.
They can't wait to go home and eat dinner.
But yeah, who knows? We'll see if they do explore options. I think they should, or even, you know, free agency, whatever. I mean, we saw what the Vikings did. You know what I mean? They went and grabbed Carson Wentz, a veteran, you know, not gonna, you know, do crazy stuff for you, but enough. He's a veteran. He's gonna not mess up the most, you know, and get you where you need to get to, especially if you got weapons around you. Like I said, when you got Jamar Chase and you've got T. Higgins and company, and they should make it pretty easy for you. But the fact that everybody was turning it over and just playing without that, it seemed like they're almost like, oh, Burrow's done shit.
I mean, on the other hand, we can also point the blame to at the offensive line. The offensive line play is terrible in Cincinnati. Like, you know, Amarian Mims, he's also getting banged up. He's missing time. Like, it seems that they just still, to this day, I mean, even this past offseason, I thought they would really go heavy and focus on the offensive line to protect Joe Burrow, to give the running backs a little bit more leeway in terms of rushing lanes and all that. But, geez, I mean, what are we doing in Cincinnati? Like, hopefully this next offseason that they're about to get into, because it seems like it's over with now unless they make a move, that – you got to focus on O-line. You got to protect your biggest asset in Joe Burrow.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a comment here from William Del Pilar is in the house. He says, I agree with Mike that team is not destined to do anything but tease. As the season wears on, injuries pile on, and they won't have any quality depth. It happens a lot, especially with that team. And that's what I mean. It's like, but how long is this going to save, like, Zach Taylor? I mean, he's been on the hot seat a few different times, but then also you look at injuries, so you're like, oh, you got to give him a pass. They didn't have that because when they, you know, Burrow's back, whatever, they're winning. But I don't know. Again, as time passes, that seat's going to get hotter. I mean, when you don't win, no matter what, I mean, look at Mike McDaniels here too with the Miami Dolphins too. I think these hot seats are starting to get crazy here. We're going to start talking about them pretty soon.
There's news out of Cincinnati that Zach Taylor is firmly, you know, completely, he's they have confidence in him. He's definitely safe. He's not going anywhere. And the fact that you're starting high-end caliber quarterback Joe Burrow is down now for pretty much the season, it's a mulligan at this point. Like you can't blame the coach because he doesn't even have anything to work with now. So, and I know that the ownership in the front office there, they absolutely love Zach Taylor. Like, there's nobody is, you know, feeling a certain way or doubting his capabilities as a coach. So until that happens, he's still safe.
All right. So, yeah, we're talking about Turnover Tuesday. I got to show this again here one more time just because it's too good to pass up. Look at this. Look at Joe making the turnovers, man. I love that. They look good. You look like you're enjoying yourselves in the kitchen, buddy. I mean,
I like me some turnovers, bro.
Nice. So let's talk about the Texans, Joe. What a disappointment. You talk about teams that are disappointing.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
I said in the beginning of this, you know, in the preseason, I'm like, all right, this is Houston's, you know, division to lose, you know. Then I think Indy's going to turn around, you know, play better. I think Daniel Jones is going to do well. Jacksonville's going to get better. And then we'll see what happens with Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so far, all that has happened except for the Houston thing. Houston, we have a friggin' problem. The defense has been okay, but the offense is putrid. Yeah. Offense, I talk about the Giants' offense being inept and terrible. The Texans' offense is 32nd ranked in the league, you know, and you talk about a quarterback who, again, after the first year, you want to start placing yourself in the top five. You need to humble yourself, buddy, because now look at yourself. You have regressed, I think, more than any quarterback right now in the league. And C.J. Stroud, I mean, stupid turnovers that he's doing, just missing receivers, just playing terribly this year.
I disagree with that. I don't think C.J. Stroud is playing terrible. I think the fact that he has no protection up front, he's always running for his life, is the reason why you have missed throws and you have rushed decision-making and everything like that that leads to mistakes. This offensive line, for the life of me, I still can't figure out to this day why they traded Laremy Tunsil before the season started. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Instead of gaining more offensive line help, hey, let's trade our best tackle away. That already spelled doom for the Houston Texans. So more times than not, like, this offensive line now is a shell of itself, and it's showing on the football field. They got tons of weapons all over the place. They have a great backfield that they can rely on, especially when Joe Mixon gets back, if he gets back. And this team would otherwise be a contender. But the fact that they can't protect up front, they can't open up rushing lanes, they're struggling to do anything at the offensive line position, that it's leading for a poor offense. They just can't overcome it. Much like the whole reasons for in Cincinnati, the same deal. The offensive line is so critical for your offense to run on all cylinders and play at a high level. And the Texans right now, they just can't do it.
Mike Taggett says, where does C.J. Gardner-Johnson end up? Was his release justifiable?
No. I'll tell you this right now. Like, for C.J. Gardner-Johnson to be flat-out released, any team that needs help at safety, whether it be help or start right away, because this kid is talented. Somebody's got to pick him up. I don't care if you got to claim him on waivers and take on that contract, or maybe you kind of roll the dice and wait for him to clear waivers, hopefully, and then you just sign him right up. But this dude is talented. I don't know what Texans are thinking about when they. I understand they already have a good defense, but now a guy that you traded for. And now you're just flat out releasing? Like, it's a little weird of a decision, much like the Laremy Tunsil trade.
Yeah, and I remember the last week there was one play he kind of gave up, but that's not like all of a sudden like you just cut a guy because of something that happens like that. You're like, no, Dan, like, you fucked up there. You're like, get the hell out of here right now. Like, pack your bags. It's like, that doesn't happen, especially a guy of his caliber. So that says to me that there's just questions going on with coaching and then the GM, and they're not melding together. Like, they're not on the same page or something there with that. So what you said, though, if any team's looking for when he's open, I think, yeah, he finds a spot. Where could he go? I don't know. Probably he wants to try and go to a contender, and contenders usually do look for guys like this just to add on, just to add more depth, you know. So, you know.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, there's a team in dire need of defensive backs, and that is the Raiders. They are absolutely god awful. They can't freaking defend the pass to save their lives. Pete Carroll needs to wake up and start making changes there.
Mike Tackett says Dabo Sweeney to Cincinnati. That would be interesting. He said Taylor's seat is firmly seated right there. So I guess, you know, we won't be seeing any of that anytime soon. But who knows?
I don't think he can make that transition.
That's right. So again, a 17-10 loss by the Texans. So again, you're watching that game. They're still in it, and with 30 seconds left in the game, a final interception that just was the nail in the coffin. You're kind of like, dude, really? And like I said, I think Jacksonville is getting better, and their defense is really good. And see, they showed out this past week too. But had opportunities. He had opportunities, and then, like I said, the fumble that set up Jacksonville for a touchdown. It's just those turnovers in the crucial moments. That's what kills you, and that's what happened here with the Texans. And that's where it sucks, because they've been in good games here. The defense is good, and just those turnovers in crucial moments. That now you're 0-3, and your rival in the Indianapolis Colts. They're undefeated right now with Daniel Jones. And Jonathan Taylor, best running back in the league right now, just crushing it. So that's got to be really eating at them. So they got to get back into this division here. So it's going to be rough.
Well, we'll see what happens this week, Jim, because the Colts got quite a contest against the L.A. Rams. So that'll be a true test.
This will be the litmus test.
How good the Colts actually are defensively and offensively with Daniel Jones.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so finally here, when we talk about our turnovers, the Falcons, right? I was talking on our other show, Football on the No Show, Wednesday nights, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, with one of our Atlanta Falcons fans, and I was like, you know what? All right, you guys probably sold me here. You know, Michael Penix Jr., he's looking really good, playing safe. Okay, I'm liking Atlanta, you know, and I think they're good. And they're playing Carolina. I said it, though, in that one again. These divisional rival games are going to be tight. They're going to be tough. But then it wasn't even that. They just got demolished by the Carolina defense. They just crushed them.
Turn the ball.
What's that? Oh, yeah, goose egg, yeah. Blown out, like 30-0, right? Just destroyed by the Panthers. I don't think anybody really even saw that. I don't know what expert picks were and things like that, but I don't think anybody really saw this happening. And, again, Michael Penix Jr., who hasn't really turned the ball over, has been playing well the first couple of games. Just, again, making mistakes all over the place on this one. And that defense making some big old plays.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too, is it got so bad towards the end of the game, they just pulled Penix out. And Kirk Cousins got to play. And guess what? Oh, Kirky still got it. 5-7 with 29 yards. So, I mean, yeah, the yardage ain't crazy, but still, like, you know, high percentage, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. You kind of tease both. Like, you're not going to make the switch and go back to Kirk Cousins, obviously, right? So you got to kind of show Kirk Cousins out there a little bit, though, too. Like, oh, here you go. See, yeah, you can still play. Who wants him? You know, what do we got out here? We'll take some trades, you know. What do we got here? What are you guys offering? You know, you still got it.
That whole deal is weird, how the Atlanta Falcons have kind of, you know, actually mishandled this whole situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With Kirk Cousins kind of being surprised or shocked before we got to this point, and finding out he was going to be the backup and not the starter going into this year. And then, is he getting traded? Is he not getting traded? We're taking calls. We're not taking calls. And now he's going to be our backup, the highest paid backup in the NFL. So very awkward and weird situation in Atlanta. Maybe with some of these teams that are in dire need of quarterback play, we mentioned Cincinnati. Probably the biggest one that needs it right now. Maybe they make some phone calls and see if they can get a deal done.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Again, it just didn't look very good. They had the fumbled punt too. That was no good. Pick six was brutal.
It was the worst. I mean, it doesn't even come down to the one pick six. It's just this game was atrocious for Atlanta Falcons across the board, defensively, special teams. Offensively, it was just a bad day at the office for them, and chalk it up as that, and let's see if they can turn this thing around next week.
All right, Joe. So there you go. There's our Turnover Tuesday. That was a lot of fun talking about all those different – and the difference that turnovers make in games. Like, we talk about it all the times, but those were kind of just atrocious for the amount in the first couple games and then where they happened and what they did and the outcomes of the games in the prior. After this week, we've – seen some pretty good games here. Again, Monday night, last night was intense. Gladiators battling out. The Detroit Lions seem back again. Now, when you look at how they came out week one, you're like, oh, you know, easy for media to be like, oh, they don't have, you know, Ryan Johnson anymore. Whatever, they don't have this. They're not going to get it done. You know, they're terrible now, you know. And then I was looking at it as like, well, I think they're good. They just got to slow. They weren't ready. You know, they're just slow start. They got to get warmed up. And week two, They got really warmed up. They got on fire. And then this week they brought it against a tough Baltimore Ravens team to where now Derrick Henry, 3 fumbles already this year. Lamar Jackson in crucial moments again, not stepping up. And this is the thing that follows the Baltimore Ravens, not only just the double-digit losses, you know, after leading, you know, in the fourth quarter, giving them up and losing in game, but in crucial moments, not winning and solidifying the game, making mistakes and getting it done, and it's the same MO for them.
Yeah, you know, and this is the problem for me with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and the way they kind of went about that game is the game was close. The game was back and forth all the way pretty much through it. And until we get towards the end to where they started making mistakes. They started to do too much, especially Lamar Jackson. We've seen the same Lamar Jackson in the first half where we're like, oh, man, he's taking off when he has to. He's distributing the football. Sometimes he's running up towards the line of scrimmage and then just kind of little quick 10-yard pass. And he was making it, you know, making the offense move, getting it down the football field, scoring touchdowns at the end. And then the second half came. And again, we've seen this Lamar Jackson before in the playoffs, kind of let the team down a little bit where he stays in the pocket instead of taking what's available. Like it went as soon as there's a crack in the offensive line or an opening that he can take off and get some real serious yardage with his legs. He just doesn't do it. He stayed in the pocket and stayed in the pocket and tried to make a play throwing the football when, dude, the Ravens fans don't care. They don't care if you throw for 300 that game. They don't care if you run for 300 that game, as long as you win. And that's the key. Stop worrying about what the outside thinks of you, because that's what it looks like to me on the outsider's perspective looking in. That every time it's crunch time to get on a big stage against a big opponent, and in the second half, man, like you could have really kind of taken over that game with your legs instead of trying to make it with your arm. And who knows if he did choose that route like he did in the first half, maybe this is a different final. Maybe the Ravens are the ones that end up coming away with the win.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we keep getting to these big games where we're expecting Lamar Jackson to do Lamar things, and he disappoints.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know everyone's going to point the finger at Derrick Henry once again, and yes, it is critical. Derrick Henry has done this twice in down the stretch moments of a game to, like, kind of ice the game or whatever and come away with the win or be able to have a chance to win the game. He's faltered.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? If we back it up a little bit earlier in the game where it didn't have to be that like that, could have been Lamar Jackson doing his thing and instead tried to be something he's not in the second half of that game. So hopefully he learns from this. We've seen it in the playoffs before where he should have done more with his legs and didn't. It's time to just do it. Do what you do, Lamar.
Yeah.
Win games Lamar. That way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to compete with Josh Allen, because that's what Josh Allen does. Josh Allen can still make plays with his legs and do that, and he will, but he's also looking to do just the shovel pass, your dish and that, when he's got to go, when he gets, you know, up to the line. And, you know, that trick play here when Derrick Henry is trying to throw it into the end zone too, how is that not discussed by Todd Monken and those guys that say, hey, Lamar's going out on this one, he's got to be absolutely an option for you, because if nobody's going to follow him, they're just thinking you're running. Then you stop, literally stop and said, so everybody know, oh, he's obviously throwing. Dude, he's open on the other side, wide open by himself. And you don't think he's going to out-juke anybody, even if they come out on him? Like, how is that not the play? We've seen this play done over and over, the Philly special. Tom Brady even out on a pass on those, and they still throw him the ball because he's wide open. People don't expect it. You got to think that's an option. And again, almost throws an interception in the end zone. So they got to clean up things like that.
And
too.
Josh, and real quick, Josh Allen is one of the more special players. And we could even say he's such a special player. He's the only player in NFL history to have 31 touchdowns to one interception over a 12-game span.
Mm-hmm.
That is elite territory, and he's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
You think of Tom Brady, you think of Aaron Rodgers in his best, you think of Jalen Hurts in his best. Nope. The only one that's ever done it is Josh Allen.
Yep.
So put that in your cereal.
Boom. He's getting so good that, you know, he's even encroaching on the SoFi commercials over Justin Herbert. So just like just like how the Chargers, when they play in SoFi Stadium, other teams' fans take over that stadium. Now Josh Allen is taking over SoFi commercials. It's come full circle.
It definitely has.
Oh, man. So, yes, Joe, there you go. Another week in the books. We're excited to see this next week unfold. More turnovers, more punt blocks. Oh, my gosh. Upsets. Green Bay loses to the Cleveland Browns. They get on the board with a win. It keeps getting better and better, but Green Bay, again, just when you buy in again, you know, Jordan Love doesn't, you know, show up, you know, just getting shut down. You know, but see, I tell you, Cleveland's got a really good defense here.
Give the Browns credit because everybody was saying that they were going to get run through by the Green Bay Packers. Everybody, even us. We didn't expect the Browns to win that game. But we did say, a little asterisk on there, we did say that this game would probably be closer than what other people are expecting. Mm-hmm. And it was. It wasn't just closer. It was closer, and then the Browns ended up coming on top and winning. Mm-hmm. So,
yes,
you know, Micah Parsons said it best at the end of the game. He said, like, you know, sometimes you play like shit. Sometimes it happens. Like, it's just, that's why it's any given Sunday. You know, even though we have, you know, such conviction on, like, oh, yeah, the Broncos should win this game. Oh, yeah, the Chargers should definitely win this game. But then next week, we could be saying, oh, man, how'd the Chargers lose that game? You know, so it's just one of those things, man.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Again, next week, again, we're going to see a whole nother new thing that's going to surprise us. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us again tonight. Joe, tell them one more time where they can find this more episodes of this podcast, but then very others easy. In the Grumblings Media family.
It's so easy, a monkey could do this. Head over to YouTube. Make sure you guys hit that subscribe button right there on Grumblings Media. Make sure you hit the thumbs up while you're there, too. It doesn't hurt. It's absolutely free. It's so easy. I do it, like, at least once a week. I unsubscribe, and then I subscribe and hit the thumbs up. You know, it's that simple. Like, so make sure you do that. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Share it. Spread the word out there. Everybody, we'll see you in the next one.
All right. See you guys. See you next week.